The road is clear. We've made the turn.
Ooh. I see what you did there.
Throwback. Shout out Randy O'Connor.
We're going to turn the board some.
Oh, I wasn't even doing that. You were doing the board is turning.
I'm just saying there's levels to this game.
There's levels to this conversation.
But we took out stacking in Starfold. Is that what we're calling it right now?
Starfold, yeah. I think you're coming around to it.
No. I can't even remember it.
Sad.
Does it hurt you a little bit?
It hurts a little bit because I'm starting to like it.
We need to rename it ASAP.
I'm Hunter Pence, and you're listening to the Misplay Podcast. Oh, yeah.
Hello, and welcome to the Misplay, where we thought cutting 100 tiny pattern squares was a good idea. My name is Mark.
My name is Jason.
What's worse is it was like 126 squares.
Yes, more than 100. What were we thinking?
You tell me it was your idea.
It was my idea. I said to Mark, we need to find out how many potential possible patterns exist in a 3x3 grid with 5 spaces. So we wanted to find out how many different ways you could arrange 5 spaces within a 3x3. I still don't know if we know the answer for sure. We got back 126 patterns, but there was a lot of overlap with them. We spent some time trying to go through them and figure out which ones are duplicates. When turned, they would then have the same orientation as another pattern. There wasn't a good way to get the information we needed. We've been trying on our own creating patterns. Then we decided, well, let's ask somebody smarter than us.
So who did we ask? ChatGPT.
To try to tell us how many possible patterns could be made in this space. It needed a lot of instructions.
I mean, the math of telling us how many possibilities there were was not hard. Getting it to give us the kinds of configurations that we wanted is what was taking the massaging. And I ran out of free prompts because I don't pay for it.
And then it made us a PDF of the patterns. And it was only like 3/4 of the page. So they were tiny. Why we didn't say then, yeah, let's not do this. Let's find a better way. There has to be a better way. We went ahead. We had the time, apparently, and started cutting these out and then grouping them, trying to find patterns and shapes that were unique, that we liked. We got it down to 14 groups, still like 30 patterns.
I think what was interesting about that, it raised a question about how we had a disagreement about criteria.
We do.
Because you came right out of it and were like, well, we have to include all of them. And then we have to either include or exclude patterns that have those gaps in a column or gaps in a row. And I was like, well, I just want the pretty ones.
Right. Before we can get to what are the pretty ones, we just had to set the criteria for what we wanted so that we can look at all of them and determine whatever our next criteria is going to be for not using them. And I was fine eventually getting to a spot where we can say, I don't like the way that one looks. That one's not going to form a constellation. I'm fine with that. But you were just doing that from the get-go. You're just like, that one I don't like. Let's just get rid of it. I was like, hold on.
But how many of those did we wind up keeping of the ones that I was like, oh, don't like that one. Don't like that one. Because we really did land on primarily removing as that criteria patterns that had a gap in a column or no way of connecting to a corner of another spot, except for, I think, one.
There's still one. We just have to figure out the math on that one. We don't want that to be a harder pattern to build because of the way it's shaped. We know that some of the other ones that we're not going to use are harder to make. So we have to figure out on that particular one if it can still be made the same way the other ones can be. Because the other ones, there's a way to place your piece and slide another piece into your shape. We say it a lot. You can go from 3 to 5. And so we just have to make sure that's possible. And then we got to the point where like, well, now let's figure out which ones can be on a card together, a legend card together, because they can't overlap more than 3 spaces in their 3x3 grid, in their different orientations. And we started going through that one by one. And that was the point where I was just like, there has to be a better way. This is tedious.
I thought we finished.
We did 2 of 30.
Oh, but that was comparing like every one to every other one.
Correct. We're trying to figure out what patterns we can make within a 3x3 grid with 5 spaces that look like constellations.
So what do you want me to do with all those little pieces of paper that you handed me today that still have those patterns on them?
I think we can recycle them. And if we are going to do it that way, let's make them bigger somehow. They are literally a half inch by a half inch. And there's 30 of them that I'm carrying around on a paperclip. But before we get to where we are, today's episode is brought to you by Spielmas. Spielmas is a holiday festival celebrated by playing a tabletop game each night between December 26th and December 31st. Spielmas was founded in 2020 by Greg Poole when the pandemic forced him to find a new gaming group online. Greg's hope is the idea of Spielmas will spur you to find your old friends and connect with them online. Call them up, teach them a game, make up for some lost time, and celebrate. And special shout out to Plants with Sunglasses in our Discord for being the first person to receive a Spielmas celebration trophy thing, which is what we're calling the display item that you use to display your components that you've played games with during the celebration. And shout out to Tyler Canning, who made the 3D printing file that we're using. For more information, visit spielmas.com, SPIELMAS.com. 6 nights, 6 games, 1 festival. Where are we?
We have been testing a lot of the version 15 rule set with the rotating board, much to our own personal acclaim, and more optimistic feedback from the friends that we've been able to show the game to.
What's our acclaim?
We're telling ourselves that we like this version most so far.
Yes, okay.
And so in the testing, we've been looking at a few new things. We're looking at how often draws occur. We're still studying the board size. And it's nice to get feedback from fresh eyes. I showed version 14 and version 15 to a climbing friend of mine. And he was like into version 14, but he was like, oh, version 15 is way better. He developed a strategy that was more interesting and more unique than what he was able to discover in the first few playthroughs of V14. And he 100% baited me on the off pattern for the entire game and won with 2 moves left in the game where I was certain that I had the game locked up because I was like, oh, he's the T and I'm this shape and he can't make his and there's a tile that I need to rotate the board for the win. I had like built my shape on board and was just waiting for my turn to rotate the board. And then he was like, I win. And I was like, well played, sir. Well played.
That's a cool story for a lot of different reasons. For the audience, version 14 is the version of the game that we brought to Proto Spiel Online. It's the version that the Golden Gate Game Makers last test. That had stacking. Version 15 is where we really like that the board rotates. No more stacking, and the board is rotating. That's version 15. I didn't know you played both versions with them, because I've already moved on, box and ship it. I'm in version 15 now. I think that's really great that you showed them the previous version and then got them to compare it to 15. I think that's a fun way to lose. I've played one other game of our game where when I lost, I was like, oh, that's well deserved by you. Good job. I don't feel bad about it at all. And I think that's a cool moment to have.
In that game with my friend, it met the metric for me where I was like, oh, my strategy is working and it is working against their strategy. And so I lost, but it didn't have that oops, I lose moment. So I agree. It was a game that I lost that felt interesting and satisfying in the way that the game concluded as opposed to stumbling into the other person's pattern.
I have felt like the rotation is hard, challenging. And I think that's good. I think having challenges in your game is great. And I think it offsets the oops, I lost moment because I think it's okay when you just maybe it's just because I keep doing it. it's okay that I didn't see that you were going to win when the board rotated two more times. That's just a hard thing to see. Until you play this game a lot, until you've really mastered what the board looks like and what the board's going to look like on future turns, I think it's totally acceptable. I don't know if somebody who feels like they've mastered the game will feel like they've escaped those moments where they're only losing because, oops, I made this mistake. But I have liked losing the game when I don't see it on a spin, on a rotation, a skew, a repoint. We're trying to find the word.
We're going to talk about that next. Because I think setting aside our optimism about version 15, setting aside the empirical process that we're trying to apply to the way that we test, now that we've committed to having a real theme for the game, I think every time we're talking about design decisions, we must always be considering the theme of the game. I'm fully on team theme now, because if it's going to be there, we have to intentionally design for it to be there. I've been thinking about how are we going to bake the theme more into the rest of what's in the game. I think moving to the story of, oh, we're looking for constellations in the sky and we're turning our telescope, I think is a great start. I think the discussions that we've had about how to visually design the tiles, how do we make it look like a night sky in the presentation and manufacturing of the board, but where are the other places that we can find ways to embed the theme in the game?
I think starting with the patterns is the most obvious one. I think that is going to be the most visually appealing aspect of the game and the pieces that the players are interacting with the most and what they are going to look like and what shape they're going to have is probably the best place to start.
I agree. And that's how we got to, dear ChatGPT, please tell us how many possibilities there are.
I think there's two ways of looking at the tile for theme. One is going to be how they're going to look on the board when we play, but also how they're going to look on the cards when we create what we're calling now constellations, the pattern that they're in and what they look like. Because right now, they're just squares, right? If you think about one of the shapes as just a T. Now, when we put that on a card, we're not just going to put a T. Visually, it's going to show the shape of a T, but I think it can be a lot prettier. It's not just going to be four rectangles on a card that says make this shape. So how they look on the pattern card that you're holding in your hand, and this is what you have to make, and it has a name, box with towel, whatever it is, I think how that card looks matters. And so not just how one tile looks, but how the five look on the card when they form the constellation that you're trying to create.
I think yes, absolutely, but you take those drawings from the legends and the legends should look like star charts and you could call them the star chart for the set that you're playing with.
Star chart, that's a great word for that. Yeah, so that's kind of the third place that they appear. They appear on the board as you're making them. They appear in your pattern card that you have. And then there's a legend, star chart, such a great word, where there are three patterns on the star chart.
You know, having now Googled that and looked at it for a second, it makes me wonder, eventually we're going to name the patterns. We're going to name them constellations of some variety.
The Mr. T constellation.
You don't like Box with a Tail?
I pity the fool, man.
Oh, no.
No?
No.
That's Mr. T.
But we're going to name them. And in my quick glance at star charts, are we going to use vocabulary and build the theme around astrology? Or are we going to build theme around astronomy?
Explain for the audience, Mark, not for me, because you know I know things. Explain the difference for the audience. Pretend they're five, please.
Astrology lives in the world of the mythology that we tell about the stars. Who is Orion's belt? It belongs to Orion. There's the Big and the Little Dipper. And depending on the folklore that you're using to explain where the constellation comes from, that's where you get your astrological narration. You could think of your signs of the zodiac.
That's astrology.
Realm of astrology.
Okay.
astronomy would be the scientific study of space and the stars.
That is a good explanation for those of you at home.
The question for us, though, is do we want to lean into kind of a more mythologized set of language for our constellations, or do we want to lean into the more scientific with your love of repointing?
Good question. Good question. I don't feel like I'm an expert in either one of those. I don't feel like I would do either field of study justice. I almost want to land somewhere in its own world. You know, you keep calling that one Box with Tao. It's funny, I like it. Box with a Tao. That would be its name. And we would have just our own little star chart with our own names. And it isn't, you know, like that's the Big Dipper, that's the Little Dipper. Because you can make some things that are similar to some of the constellations that are more familiar to people. But there's always going to be like, somebody's like, yeah, that one's not right. Did you see how you made your Little Dipper go that way? It's supposed to go the other way. You can't have the Little Dipper going to the left or whatever it is, because it always appears in the night sky facing this way. And I just don't want anyone to nitpick the game on that level. In my head, we're going in the middle. We're going to take pieces of that, but create our own night sky.
That'd be a good name for the game.
Better than Starfall.
By a pretty wide margin.
Night sky. How do you feel about that? Were you thinking astrology? Were you thinking astronomy?
I hadn't thought that far ahead, but stumbling on star chart made me think of the question, like, are we going to do a more astrological or a more astronomic kind of storytelling with the language that we use in the game? I think for me personally, I actually really enjoy the language and the mythology that astrology would offer in the way that we could draw from language. And I think is more relatable to a wider audience.
What's your astrological sign?
I think I'm an Aries.
I think I'm an Aries. He's not even sure.
I'm told I'm an Aries.
I'm told I'm a Scorpio. I don't, beyond that, I know nothing else.
I've become very attached now to the idea of the legends being star charts.
I think using that vernacular that lines up with astrology and astronomy maybe is totally fine. I think that makes sense. I'm just not ready to lean into you're building the zodiac sign or you're building the Gemini sign.
Sure.
One, are those even credible with five shapes?
Cursory glance to me says no. But box with a tail.
Box with a tail you can do.
I still really like Orion's pelt.
Orion's pelt is a hard no.
I think that question aside, I don't think we can really sit down to start trying to name them until we know what the shapes are. But knowing that this concept of, oh, here's, you know, we're playing on playing cards. We have our green set, we have our purple set, and we have our yellow set for the constellations. If you wanted to go in the more astronomy-based language, you could go, this is the Milky Way star chart. This is the Andromeda star chart. And you could lay it out that way.
I think it would be fun to come up with your own, but maybe not. Maybe the people that this game might appeal to with that theme, they might be annoyed that we've come up with our own. It's not the Milky Way, it's the Snickers way.
How could you leave out Pisces?
The Reese's peanut butter galaxy.
I think there's something to it. And these are the kinds of things that I think largely will contribute to little extra bits that we can put into the game, the visual presentation, the language, the other design elements to make the theme pop in the game. I worry a little bit about how much thematic language you could force into the rules that we're playing with. It makes me nervous at the prospect of writing a rulebook that we want to be as crystalline clear as the night sky to say, place a gray tile and repoint the board. It gives me pause. I'm not saying we can't do it, but I'm not sure how much thematic language we can put in that won't obscure the meaning of how the game is supposed to be played. So that balance of how much can the rules bear the thematic weight? And I think for me, I'd want to lean on the side of, I want to write the rules in a way where new player error is as minimal as possible while playing the game.
would you then write the rules without theme and then bring it in afterwards? So you get all the language you want right, and then you look for the words that you can change. Like, we won't call it a gray tile. So for example, we're not going to call it place the gray tile. But let's say we're using repointing. I know that term is not stuck, but I think the rule is as simple as place the gray tile and repoint the board. But the gray tile is the part of that sentence that's going to change. It's maybe it's purple star. I don't know what it's going to be. However, we're differentiating and however we're referring to the three tiles.
I like the idea of calling the tiles stars. I know we'll run into kind of a narrative issue of, well, we're not moving the stars, or maybe we are, who knows, depending on the story we feel like telling. I could see some writing of the rules where instead of saying place a tile, I could see when you find a purple star.
Yeah, I see that. Yeah, you're identifying it, you're finding it in the sky, and then you're putting it on the map. Totally.
I think that's the kind of finesse. You want to find a way to preserve connection between components that you're manipulating and the things that you're doing with them. So if the tiles that we're playing with now, if we're going to call them stars, I think it makes sense to keep stars as the component part of the rule and then making sure that the action part of the rule remains clear. I think that's the balance that will feel the best to me.
So that's one aspect of the rule book where we can incorporate theme in the way that it is driving the mechanics. If we had created our own Milky Way, Snickers Way, our own constellation names, is there a space in the front of the rule book where you kind of identify what the world is and what you're doing as players? Do you want people going, oh, I'm taking on the role of an astronomer in this place?
If I close my eyes and try to imagine the story that I would tell of this game, it would be two friends laying on a grassy hill in a warm Midwest summer, staring at the night sky, gently racing to find the constellation they're looking for.
I like how you say gently, because it, you know, it's, you know, a head-to-head game, but it's not combative. You're not fighting the other player. You're pushing and moving. There are stars, though. There is some aspect of that. Gentle is nice.
So I don't necessarily know that I would ascribe a particular role to the players. I would be like, you're an astronomer. You're an astrological medium. Like, I don't think you need those things.
I like the head-to-head battle that creates. I really like what you said about two friends just laying up and looking at the night sky, the starfold. Yeah, night sky sounds better.
Let's go.
I like the idea of that. It'd be a really pretty box. Like I can see two people laying on the, looking up at the sky. No, that's cool. I'm glad we had this conversation today. Beyond that, then, I think there's some space for us to think about components, like where the tiles go in a shared pool, or what is actually holding the pattern card that's in front of you when you're playing. But also, I think the bigger thing, and you've talked about this before, is what the board looks like. Are they actually square still? Are the pieces squares, or do they have a different shape to them that fit within some grid that has to rotate? I think those are things we can worry about later. I think we're settled on theme. I think the only thing that says to me, hey, are you sure about a galaxy star theme? Are you sure about a star theme? Is there's a lot of other games that use this theme. This isn't unique in the way that I talked to you before about, I wanted you to, for your trick-taking game, to do dance fighting. I wanted you to have the capoeira theme because there's not a lot out there that has that. And that would be unique. Well, there's a lot of games out there that focus on stars and the night sky and galaxy. We found one recently called Stargazers that is incredibly similar to what we're doing. Scary a little how similar it is. We think we're different enough, but that's the only thing that's keeping me from going 100%, this is the theme. What do we have to do first to say, yes, this is going to be the theme? It's going to be stars. It's going to be friends sitting on a hill looking up, whatever. How do we know for sure that we can lock that in? What other research do we have to do? Because we found the game Stargazers. That's very close to what we're doing. And there was even a comment that said, whoa, too close. We can't do this. Do I have to ask a lawyer?
I have two considerations for that discussions of, is this too close to stargazers? From what we've learned about stargazers, I would first say our end game is very different. We have find your pattern and you win. Stargazers has some point system of how many constellations or how many patterns can you draw to form, and you score based on how many you put together. So I think the end game is significantly different. I think the scoring component is significantly different. Do we have to play stargazers and be like, these are two same, two different? That could be a step. You could also blind test it or test it with less invested stakeholders where you say, hey, we're going to have a game night. We're going to play game A and game B. Are they too close to both exist in the world? You could ask your testers that. On the other hand, how many games can you describe like Risk? I think 8-Minute Empire could be Risk. I think the Game of Thrones game that we played at Gen Con 2 years ago could be like Risk. Eschaton, I think you could argue, is Risk. If it's just about a tile placing game that has this theme, how many war games where you're just competing to have the most territory in the game are there?
That's fair. I like your idea of maybe picking up a copy of the game and having somebody play both and say, is that too similar?
I think the other way you could differentiate is you look at the components of Stargazers and be like, well, our components have to be significantly different.
All we've seen is just a quick play video. We haven't seen a full playthrough of it. We've just seen their promotional video.
That would be the starting place. And then if we were worried that they're too similar to exist in the same universe, Stars joke.
Well done. Yeah.
Then you talk to a lawyer. I hear we've got a good one.
Yeah. Yeah, we do.
For what it's worth, though, I'm all in on Stars theme now.
I basically am. You need to track more games in the tracking dock, though.
I only played one at...
We have to put more games in. Because you said it in the beginning of the show, one of the things we're trying to figure out is, are there too many ties? And that would change... It wouldn't change the mechanics, but it might change the size of the board. It might change the number of patterns on a card. There's still big implications around that.
The Misplay Podcast is brought to you by Mike C., Missy, JP Savard, Parney, Kyle Flowers, Ajos, Brian Bins, and Peter. Consider donating at buymeacoffee.com/themisplay. If you'd like to become a featured sponsor of the show, find our form at themisplay.com/sponsors. Jason's going to get me a chair for Spielmas.
I'll 3D print you one.
Love to see the Google on which one's more expensive, 3D printing something of that size or bring your kitchen chair downstairs.